From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, spirit guides and Ouija boards. Oh boy, here's what's happening. The City of San Francisco has announced that proof of full vaccination would be required for entry to restaurants, gyms, and indoor venues, aiming to curb a new wave, they say, of COVID infections that has prompted public health mandates across the country. San Francisco, which launches its mandate on August 20th, is the second major city to issue a sweeping vaccine requirement for indoor businesses after New York, which only requires proof of one vaccination dose. A lot of people, though, are fighting this. The FDA is working to okay Pfizer, Moderna, COVID booster shots for certain immunocompromised patients. They should make action sometime tomorrow. Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and White House Chief Medical Advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, you know that name, has been warned that during a press briefing that a booster shot will be required for everyone sooner or later to ensure that the durability of protection from COVID-19 vaccines continues. Frito-Lay has issued a recall for some potato chips that might pose a danger for people with allergies to milk. The voluntary recall is for 31 bags of Wavy Lay's original potato chips, as they may contain undeclared milk ingredients. The 7.75-ounce bags, which were sent to North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia, could have been purchased any time after July 23rd. In recent days, there have been recalls for beef, chicken, and now potato chips. Here's food safety coach Jeff Nelkin. Jeff, why all these recalls? What's going on?
Well, you know, we're watching a lot of things, you know, and besides the E. coli, the listeria, and the salmonella, we're also looking for undeclared allergens and, you know, defects, you know, that are found, you know, in the production. So that's why you see it increasing.
It's increasing at a tremendous rate, though. I never recall it happening like one after the other.
Well, I think we have better systems in place now, so we're catching a lot more.
These companies, are they required to instantly go public with this stuff?
Yes.
And what do you recommend people do? Bring this stuff back, throw it out? What do they do?
Well, that's usually what the companies will tell you. But if you're not sure, or if you're feeling ill, or you have any symptoms, to contact your doctor and let them know that, you know, you're having symptoms and you think there may be a relationship. So it's important to stay on top of it and also communicate, you know, with the company. They'll give you, you know, further information.
Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com. Thank you, Jeffrey. The Taliban have claimed the capture of Afghanistan's second-largest city, Kandahar, in what would be a major win for those militants. The city was once the Taliban's stronghold and is strategically important as a leading trade hub. Several cities fell on Thursday in the most dramatic string of victories yet. The United States said it is sending nearly 3,000 troops back into Afghanistan to help evacuate staff from the American embassy. It has turned out to be a mess and a disaster. On the night of July 30th, a Canadian military in a KLM Royal Dutch Airlines flight reported a strange UFO over the Gulf of St. Lawrence. According to an aviation incident report posted on the night of August 11, both flights reported seeing a bright green flying object that flew into a cloud and then disappeared in a stretch of open water between Quebec and Newfoundland. It's an amazing story. It's time for Kevin Randall for his weekly report on the strange and unusual. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, George. How's it going?
All is well, considering, right?
Yeah, it's been a crazy day around here, too.
It sure has. What do you got for us this week,
Kevin? Well, as we all know, triangular-shaped UFOs are being seen on a regular basis now. You have to wonder if there's been some kind of improvement in the alien ships, or if there are different races using different sorts of craft, or if it's a result of our technology. And I think I have a partial answer for that, and we'll get that in a minute. On June 19th of this year, the witness in Leesburg, Florida, said that he was outside about 7 in the morning when he heard an aircraft approaching and then flying directly overhead. He said it looked dark, more dark than charcoal, was triangular with two structures protruding from the rear. He wondered at first if it could be an F-17 or possibly an F-22, but it didn't look like either of those aircraft. He thought it might be a new type of stealth aircraft, but thought it might be a UFO, and the UFO was in sight for more than 5 minutes. On June 16th, a witness in Streetsboro, Ohio, was walking his dog about 9:30 p.m. when he noticed three bright lights hovering. They eventually morphed into a single bright light. He said that it seemed that this light was rotating. He said that after about 2 minutes, another UFO arrived. This one looked like it was being chased by a fighter. He said there was an extremely loud explosion that made him wonder if the fighter had broken the sound barrier. The UFOs made no sound. The witness said that it was all recorded on video and that he would upload it to the Internet, and if I can find a link, I'll post that to my blog. From Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, on June 9th, comes a report of a triangular-shaped object hovering about 50 feet in the air with two steady lights in front, multiple blinking lights on the side, and there were multiple lights on the bottom. The witness said the object was slowly rising. Unlike most sightings, this object was loud. It moved in a zigzag motion, and it would speed up and slow down. The witness reported there was video of the object, but he hasn't posted it yet. Also on June 9th, the witness in Arlington, Virginia, was stopped in traffic in front at an elevation of about 45 degrees and at 1,500 feet up in the sky were three objects. Each was followed by a long, twisted contrail of about 1,000 feet or more. The contrails were identical for each of the objects, suggesting they were flying in some kind of formation. These were brown or reddish color rather than the white from normal contrails. The UFOs moved in a random pattern, often crossing each other's path. The witness reported a regular airplane nearby that had its nose wheel in a fixed position. The witness thought the UFOs might be skydivers or hang gliders deployed to either report on the stricken airplane or provide some sort of assistance, though I don't know how they would do that. However, and according to the witness, the airplane was obviously an airplane, and shortly after he saw the plane, two objects, along with their contrails, vanished. Moments later, the third object vanished as well. The witness wanted to take video but was unable to figure out how to use the cell phone camera, which I find bizarre in today's world. The witness said it all happened in daylight and would be surprised if there weren't other witnesses to the event. Finally, I found a report posted in the last few days to YouTube that had a discussion of triangular-shaped craft, including sightings made during the first Gulf War, which I'll post the link to on my blog. And I think this upswing in triangular UFO sightings might be a simple matter of perception or our aviation technological advances. And that's what I have for tonight, George.
All right, Kev, we'll talk to you next week. Something's going on. And Kevin, of course, is a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel who served in Vietnam as a helicopter pilot. Thank you for serving. In a moment, Billy Carson back with us. He was one of our secret door guests last week. I guessed who he was. I missed all the other three, but I got Billy right. But in a moment, Billy Carson joins us. We're going to talk about a lot of strange anomaly stories on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Billy Carson with us, founder and CEO of the Forbidden Knowledge Company and the best-selling author of The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets and The Woke Doesn't Mean Broke. Mr. Carson is also the founder and CEO of Forbidden Knowledge TV, a new conscious streaming television network, and is also the expert host on Deep Space, a new original streaming series by Gaia Series that explores the secret space program. Billy, welcome back. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, good to be back again, George.
You know what? Finally, the clue that got me to guess who you were, and I was right, was when we were talking about Beyond Belief, our streaming show on Gaia.
And yeah, I picked up on that. I mean, I didn't want to give you any fake answers, so I answered correctly.
Yeah, no, that's good.
We actually had one of the all-time most streamed shows on Gaia.
Well, you do a great job. And matter of fact, we'll talk about your Gaia shows as well. But you're doing a lot of different things right now. Let's talk about each thing that you've been doing to give everybody a perspective with what you do. First of all, tell us about Forbidden Knowledge. Tell us about that company.
Yeah, so Forbidden Knowledge, I founded that back in 2010, really, is when I started it. And I wanted a way to come bring knowledge to the world. From a perspective of information that was hard to find, hard to piece together. I knew that I had this skill and talent of putting pieces of the puzzle together from all the various different things that I've researched in all my travels. And so I decided to form a company that that I can bring this information through, and began to put out really an immense amount of information and content through multiple channels, making Forbidden Knowledge the main channel, and underneath that, creating sub-channels through social media and other platforms that that were, you know, kind of specializing in different topics that people liked. So Forbidden Knowledge is very general topic-based, where I cover so many different aspects of our reality, everything from spirituality, esoteric wisdom, metaphysics, all the way to theoretical physics, quantum physics, aerospace technology, UFOs, and everything else. And it's worked out very well. So far, the company has really grown and allowed me to reach out to now literally millions of people, and has kind of helped me create my own TV network, which I now have 5,200 shows on.
Good for you. Now, what is the United Family of Anomaly Hunters?
That is a nonprofit that I formed with Thomas Michael Jensen out of the UK. And we decided that, you know, we had been looking for anomalies, space anomalies, on official space agency images for a couple of years. This is back a few years ago now. And we decided that to create a team of anomaly hunters that could go and scour through these millions of images that we get from the space agencies, because they're publicly available, and start looking for more space anomalies that we can bring to the general public. And we've now gone through well over a million images and cataloged over 60,000 space anomalies in these images. And we're trying to bring proof forward that there was an advanced civilization, or evidence of an advanced civilization in ancient times on these other moons and planets in our own solar system. Plus, we believe that there may still be some type of life now, potentially on Mars, maybe even Venus, and Titan, a moon of Saturn.
Super. We'll get into this. And, of course, you're hosting a couple shows on Gaia, deep space and ancient civilizations, and that's going great for you.
Yeah, going phenomenal. I think both are in season 3 or 4. It's been a great experience. The producers there have been phenomenal. They make it very easy for you, you know, and it's just been a great opportunity for me to spread the information and the expertise that I have, and using their platform to help it bring it to more people that may have not even known who I was.
And you have a streaming network yourself. Tell us about that.
Yes. So I decided to start a streaming network about 5 years ago, to be honest with you. I bought ForbiddenKnowledge.tv a long time ago. And at that time, I was streaming maybe about only 200 shows. But the bandwidth was so expensive back then. It was so competitive.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was costing me about $2,500 a month back then. And I said, okay, I need to take a break from this one for a while. And then when streaming platforms became the norm and everybody started streaming, I was a little bit ahead of my time. I said, let me bring this back. I kept my domain. I didn't get rid of it. And so I came back and I hopped on an OTT platform and built out Forbidden Knowledge TV. And it's now just like Netflix or Amazon Prime Video or Guy or anyone else. You know, we've got a great streaming platform, $7.77 a month. You get access to an enormous amount of streaming content, TV shows, documentaries, nature shows, and so forth, lectures, workshops from a lot of great speakers from around the world that a lot of people have never gotten a chance to see.
Well, and as it appears, most people are going to be stuck in their homes again. They're going to need to do something, right?
Exactly. It's the perfect time. I launched in 2020, and we had a phenomenal first 12 months. Primarily, the majority of the the lockdown was from March is when we launched, all the way till we're still live now. And so it's done phenomenal. And if it's more people are stuck at home, they'll definitely be able to delve into this knowledge and wisdom.
Deep Space for Gaia, of course, explores the secret space program. How did you approach that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I went there to meet the owner of Gaia. They asked me to come meet him. No, he requested me to come out. So I flew out, met with him, and he said to me in the initial conversation we were having, he was kind of trying to really vet me to see if I was really a knowledge-based guy or if I was just a Google cut-and-paste
guy. He's shrewd. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he does. He does. So he said, Melissa Tittle is here, one of the producers from Ancient Aliens, and she wants to ask you a few questions on video just to see, you know, how you do. I said, oh, sure, no problem. And they kind of threw me to the wolves, And so without any prep, without any pre-information, without any questions, whatever, they threw me in front of a camera and lights and mic'd me up and went through an entire season worth of questions with me. And I obviously did so well, they put all of my answers into season one.
What do you think of the so-called secret space program, Billy?
Oh, it definitely is real. Once NACA was formed, NACA, they started working on, you know, regular standard rocket propulsion ideas and concepts for launching satellites. And then we had the whole Project Paperclip incident, and we then created NASA. And NASA was the general basis for the foundation of the program that would be presented to the world. But behind that, because of the advanced scientist knowledge that they had from the Project Paperclip, bringing the Nazi scientists over, they decided to create a back project, a back program, or secret space program, where they can work on some of these other unacknowledged projects, and they would show the mainstream rocket propulsion technology, ballistic missile technology to the world. But behind the scenes, they were working and developing, or continuing to develop, this Hanabu, oval or circular craft technology.
Billy, Paul Hellyer, the former defense minister of Canada, who just passed away at the age of 98, has said that he believes that we have Americans on Mars. My jury's still out on that. What do you think?
I believe that we do, to be honest.
You do?
Yeah, I really do. I've seen images from McMurdo Valley on Mars, from the Opportunity rover. I've seen images from the Spirit rover that show objects or anomalies that look like tanks. And these aren't even obfuscated images. They're not blurry. They're crystal clear with the human eye can see. It looks like we may have already been going there and establishing a military base. Now, to add a little further credence, we have this military shuttle that goes up and launches. I think it's the X-33B, I believe they are. But they launch, and we were notified of their launches. We're told when they're going to launch. They go away for 700 days, 725 days at a time. They're cargo ships that launch from Earth, and then they come back and land 2 years later. Where are they going?
Exactly.
I think they're taking cargo to Mars.
Interesting take. And, of course, your other program, Ancient Civilizations, deals just with that, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. We're dealing with ancient civilizations. We're dealing with, you know, information from the Enuma Elish, the Seven Tablets of Creation, the Atrahasis epic, the Code of Hammurabi, the Epic of Gilgamesh, and the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, you know, a lot of these ancient texts that we know these ancient ancestors of ours have kind of really tried to depict and tell us about what happened back then. And it seems as if we had some visitors that came here and engaged mankind. And so it really digs deep into that and kind of trying to unravel the mystery behind a lot of the secrets of religion and spirituality and where are the origins of all this comes from.
The report that came out by the National Intelligence Group at the end of June about UAPs, UFOs, didn't say too much. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it really didn't say too much, but if you have an eye for discernment, you can see that it kind of still said a lot. Obviously, they could have came with a lot more, and it seems to be a lot more classified documents than declassified. But, however, at least they are admitting that there is something going on that they don't know what it is, and they're able to maneuver and make different types of movements in ways that seem to break the laws of physics. So that was stated there. So that now nobody can be called a tinfoil hat wearing crazy when you talk about, you know, UFOs. The other thing is that they didn't really state that some of these objects are unacknowledged black budget projects that are created by us human beings and not UFOs. But they're going to keep that top secret because they want
sure.
the advantage on the war side.
Do you think the Russians and Chinese believe it could be ours, or do you think they think it's extraterrestrial?
I think that they're believing that it's ours and that they're also working on their own unacknowledged black budget projects. I think every country has now developed some of the same similar technologies. And they're all just behind the scenes working on these black budget projects, keeping it away from their other countries and even their own citizens. And they also believe that they all know about the real UFOs that exist that are not from this world. And they're totally aware of it. I think they're also in collusion with one another in terms of, you know, the knowledge about these UFOs.
Billy, when we come back in just a moment, I want to talk about a couple of your books, the best-selling book Emerald Tablets, and also the Woke Doesn't Mean Broke, which is just a well-done book. They both are. We'll come and talk about those when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. September right around the corner. Just amazing how fast this year is going. I kind of want to get this year done, don't you? I think a lot of people do. Hands up. Yep, absolutely. We're going to take calls next hour with Billy Carson as we talk about the secret space program. We're going to get into a couple of his works, his books, in just a moment on Coast to Coast. And his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Billy Carson. We're going to talk about a couple of his books. One is, of course, The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets. That Billy, I had the honor of being able to write a little blurb for you on that. It was a bestseller on Amazon, still going strong, isn't it?
Yeah, still a bestseller on Amazon, 31 months straight. And it probably would be in the top 10 consistently. It's just that I sell half of the books on my website. They have... It probably would have hovered in the top 10 consistently, but it's a phenomenal book, resonating with a lot of people.
Let's tell us a little bit about the title, The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets, and tell us about these Emerald Tablets.
Yeah, sure, definitely. So a compendium means the breaking down of information. So what I did was I read the Emerald Tablets myself quite a few times, and I realized it was really touching on a lot of things that some people I had talked to about them didn't realize. And the more people that I talked to didn't realize the full message, they couldn't understand it, is what they were telling me. So I decided that since I had this special gift or ability to break it down and understand it a little bit better than average, I'd dig deep into them and create a compendium. And that ended up turning into this book that I put out. And the book is primarily based on the ancient Egyptian guy or person named Thoth, T-H-O-T-H. Some call him Thoth.
He's on your cover, right?
He's on the cover, exactly. He's always depicted with the head of an ibis bird, even though he really had the face of a man. The ibis bird is just an analogy. It's just trying to say that he's an entity or a being that helps bring darkness to light. That's what it really means. But he, according to the ancient Egyptians, ruled over the land of Kem long before it was called Egypt. He ruled for 14,000 years. He went around the world teaching humans language, architecture, arts, and all different types of metaphysical and alchemical teachings as well. He also was the founder of the Egyptian mystery schools. So it's a very interesting gentleman. And in that book, I really break down the similarities between where a lot of religions took the original text from his tablets and created an offshoot of different religions, including Christianity. And it just really goes to this ancient tablet that he wrote so many years ago. The estimate is around 36,000 years ago that these tablets were written in Egypt. Jeez. And then taken across into Mesoamerica with him and some Olmecs to build Teotihuacan. And then much later in 1929, permission was given for a gentleman to go and grab those tablets and bring them back to Egypt. And along the way, he was allowed and given permission to make a translation of them. So it's a long story, but these tablets have been pretty much around the world, and the message in them is really to help mankind ascend to a higher level of consciousness.
Are these tablets somewhere now?
I believe that the tablets are in the Vatican archives and at Five Mile Underground Archive in Rome. That's where I believe they're located now.
And truly made out of emerald.
Yeah, made out of emerald or stones that are emerald green, but not emerald. And some form of alchemically created tablet, stone tablet, that according to the writer, is atomically fixed structure that can't rot or, or decay.
The messages that Thoth left behind were almost like a training guide for the world, wasn't it?
Yeah, really, that's what it was. It's really a training guide for us to learn, number one, to love ourselves, how to look within for answers and not on the outside, how to master the human avatar body and all the abilities that it actually has, has, and then also from there to understand that there are this group of entities or people called the Dark Brothers, which is a small group, but that would dominate the planet Earth, and that we, as the citizens of the world, we need to unite as one, that we need to come together with unconditional love, seeking the light, and the only way to overcome these Dark Brothers is to unify and become one, not to continue to take part in this divide and conquer.
Last year, you wrote a book called Woke Doesn't Mean Broke. It's a huge book. It's well over 600 pages.
Yeah, it's a huge book. It's been called now the Financial Bible. It's a financial literacy book. I've been pretty fortunate, George, and I've been, you know, I grew up with very meager beginnings, but I've turned myself into a self-made millionaire. And people would look at me over the years like, this guy is supposed to be conscious, but he's got these nice houses and he's got nice cars. And how can he be conscious? You're not supposed to have money if you're conscious. And so I just got tired of it. I said, you know what? At some point, I got to let these people know, hey, to be financially, set and have abundance and still be conscious. Like, there's no, to me, if you're walking in consciousness and you're teaching people how to manifest their reality, manifest their destiny, I believe that you're supposed to be able to walk in abundance. And if you're not, I think that, and abundance means something different for everyone, but I believe if you're not, then you're not really utilizing the true esoteric wisdom and powers that are inside of you. So I decided to write that book to teach people financial literacy, which is really lacking in the world, because a lot of the reason why people suffer financially is they just don't know what they're doing with money and how to operate and how to navigate this financial matrix, and also how to combine that with spiritual concepts to show you that the two can go hand in hand, and you can manifest a legacy for your family, and you can live good, you can have abundance, and you can teach others conscious things as well.
Billy, where were you born?
New York City, Queens, New York.
When you were growing up as a kid, did you ever imagine you'd be doing what you're doing today?
No, I didn't. Not when I was a kid.
No way, huh?
No. I just thought that I would continue to have, I had a huge thirst for knowledge and books. At the age of one, I was already reading novels. The first novel I read at 1 year old was The Sea Wolf by Jack London.
Who encouraged you? Your parents?
My father encouraged me. That's why I dedicated the Woke Doesn't Mean Broke to my father, because he was a pretty hardcore guy, and he had me doing book reports at the age of one. Starting at one, he had me doing book reports.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
When you went to school, did you ace all your courses?
Yeah, it was too easy. I'm not going to lie. I remember when we moved to Miami, Florida, and my mom took me up to the school, Rainbow Park Elementary. And they said, well, we can put him in kindergarten or the second grade, you know, which one did you want to do? And my mom said, well, just put him in the first grade. That way he's kind of in the middle, because, you know, that way the kids wouldn't be too old for him or whatever. But it wasn't that difficult. I scored very high on the ASVAB test, and the United States military came after me for 5 years after I graduated because of my ASVAB scores.
They wanted you, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, they wanted me bad. I didn't want to go. I also didn't have eye dominance, so that would be great for a fighter pilot. I didn't take advantage of that.
Well, good for you. You were, the last time we were talking, too, you were working on a movie.
Mm-hmm.
The Chronicles of the Anunnaki. How's that coming?
It's coming along good. We obviously had a little bit of a delay with the whole shutdown that occurred.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were making some, it was crazy. We were making some great, great progress. We now just went back into talks again 1 month ago, and everything is starting back up, and we're moving forward again. We're getting everything going. And there's another movie I'm doing called Quantum Walkers, which is also in the script writing process right now.
Zachariah Sitchin, the late Zachariah Sitchin, talked about the Anunnaki quite a bit, that they came here, seeded us. Do you accept that theory?
Yeah, I do believe that. I believe that based off my own research, not off of his research, on my own research, and everything that I've read, over 1,000 books, scriptures, cylinder scrolls, papyruses, cuneiform tablets, Akkadian, Babylonian, Sumerian, it appears that we have been, we meaning some humans or humanoids, I should say, our cousins, not Homo sapiens sapiens, but our cousins, were seeded here on this planet. I even spent time with Aboriginal elders in Australia, and they told me the same exact thing. Their handed down verbal history for thousands of years is that they were seated on this planet. And at some point, these Anunnaki Atlantean people came here and genetically modified the existing hominid and put them to work, made us think that they were our gods, and we happily did the work for them.
Billy Carson with us. His website, forbiddenknowledge.com. It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's spelled with the number 4, then bidden, B-I-D-D-E-N, knowledge.com. We're going to be taking calls with Billy all of next hour, so get ready to make the phone call as we talk about extraterrestrials and belief in our systems. This woke doesn't mean broke really also is kind of like a motivational book, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's designed to really inspire you. You get some of my story in the very beginning of the book in the preface. And so you get to get an idea of where I'm coming from. I mean, I used to have holes in my shoes, and I used to have to put cardboard in the bottom of my shoes to keep my feet from touching the street. I only had 2 pairs of pants, so I would bleach them, and then I would use the rich dye for 69 cents from the grocery store. I would dye them different colors so that at least it looked like I had more than 2 pair of pants, you know. So it was pretty meager beginnings. I used to eat matzahs and butter and syrup and Cairo syrup and toast for food.
Did you ever keep anything as a reminder, as a memento of where you came from?
Actually, yes. I have a couple of things from that time period, from growing up, that I've kind of taken along with me. You know, and sometimes I take a trip down there, and I've taken even my kids, who are not all adults now, but I've taken my kids back to the old neighborhood, and let's let them take a peek at this is where I came from, you know. And I sometimes myself every couple of years go down just to remind myself, never get back to this.
You know, every time I'm back in Detroit or something, I'll go by the old neighborhood and look at one of the houses we were in when I was raised as a kid. Yeah. And they look so small, don't they?
Yeah.
Of course, they are small,
yeah.
But I mean, they really look small.
They're tiny. I mean, I saw this one place. We were in a quadruplex, and there was 4 units, and it was me and my whole family. Me, my brother, and my sister, we all slept on the couch bed, and my parents slept, of course, in the one bedroom. It was one bedroom, one bath, the kitchen and everything. Everything was so tiny. I couldn't believe when I saw with my eyes, at, you know, at my age now, it was smaller than a box of cards.
Truly remarkable.
Yeah.
How time flies and how things change, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you do anything differently than you've already done?
I wouldn't. You know, everything has led me to the point where I'm at right now. Everything has built me to who I am. All the rights, all the wrongs, all the successes, all the faults, rises and falls. It's all led me here. You know, the hard work that my dad instilled in me. Sometimes it could have been extremely harsh for the average kid. Would have been, you know, to be told at the age of 12 you have to pay rent. Things like that put me in a position to be who I am today.
I got a kick out of the picture of you on the cover of Woke Doesn't Mean Broke. And there are no holes in those shoes, let me tell you.
No holes. No holes. The shoes are levitating me now, you know. And I remember when I turned 12 and I started my first business and I started making some money, the first thing I did was I said, I'll never, ever have holes in my shoes again. So the first thing that I started doing was buying new sneakers. And so I had so many sneakers that the kids started calling me Nike Man. So, but every year I would then take all the shoes that I bought and I would donate them back to kids who didn't have shoes in school.
What do you think of the homeless situation these days, Billy?
You know, I think it's really a shame because I've been everything, including after I rose to a pretty successful person as a very young man. I ended up becoming homeless for just 1 week because one of my biggest clients ended up having some financial problems and going under. And I had a brand new house, a brand new car, a baby on the way and everything else. And I couldn't find anything to sustain or replace that income that I lost. And it ended up being 1 week on the beach. And so I got a perspective from being homeless. I got that perspective.
Did you sleep on the beach and all that?
I had a little old raggedy car. I slept in the car at the beach. I didn't have any air conditioning working or anything. Somebody lent me $30 and I turned it into quarters and I got on a payphone and started making phone calls out of the Yellow Pages and getting some new marketing deals and got some advanced monies and got myself off the street. But now I understand what it means to be homeless. I understand that perspective and not everyone wants to be there. Some people are there just because of circumstances. And we really need to put together programs and procedures to put in place to give the people mental stability, the ones that need mental help, real mental help, and that are out there. And then other ones who are just put in a bad situation, in bad circumstances, we need to put something together for those people there's no reason why, you know, right around the corner from a group of homeless people, that there's people living in, $3 million condos. So we got to find a way as a people to just come together and set something aside just for the people that are homeless and help them and give them a chance to grow and develop and get back on their feet.
I've advocated homeless cities. You know how the Chinese are building cities with nobody in there. They're just buildings right now. But I've advocated homeless cities for the homeless. And I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago on the show, and one person sent me a really nice email. But another person sent a very strange email, and it said, they're all drug addicts, alcoholics. And I looked at that, and I answered the person back, and I said, no, they're not. Some of them are. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
But they're not. They're people who are just, they've had hard luck.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Hard luck will put you there. Not every single one is a drug addict. I wasn't a drug addict. Listen, I drank two beers when I was 17. I didn't like it. I never drank again. I've never smoked a cigarette. I've never smoked any kind of other drug. I've never taken anything. I don't even like going to clubs and hanging out. And I was homeless. So if I can be homeless, so we can't stereotype people. We have to understand that there are circumstances that put people in situations that are unfavorable. I was fortunate enough to be able to look up and get up. I knew the recipe to success. So all I needed was a pocket full of quarters and a payphone, and I got myself back on my feet. A lot of people aren't that resourceful. I was very fortunate. I was more resourceful than the average person. And so they end up getting stuck out there, sometimes for years, sometimes forever. And so we really need to look out for our fellow man, and we need to be able to put things together for them to not only just, not just like a helping hand, but also teach them, give them some abilities that they can become productive in society in some way.
Absolutely. Billy, we're going to come back and take some phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.